cosa son, cosa faccio? Por di poco lo so, non mi chiaccio, ma mi erone di verde colore, e mi erone mi fa palpità, ma mi erone mi fa palpità.
Welcome to the Art Scene, presented each week by UALR Public Radio. A number of the many who watch the high-definition live telecasts of performances from the Metropolitan Opera stage in New York City will also have seen the documentary, aired several years ago, of the Metropolitan Opera National Council auditions, which followed the fortunes of a group of singers as they entered the competition from the first stage at the district level, such as that which will take place in Little Rock next Saturday, where winners move on to the region, for Arkansas that will be Memphis, then the winners of the final stages reach New York City, and who knows what fame and fortune may await them. My guest is juror Carol Freeman, a graduate of Oklahoma City, an acclaimed singer and director, well known in Arkansas and much loved for the years he spent directing each summer in Eureka Springs with the Summer Apprentice Program, now known as Opera in the Ozarks. He entered the MONC auditions when his career as a singer was already well established, and he won the first two rounds on his first attempt, but no further. And he describes some of those days and what it is to be a juror for these prestigious auditions.
And that was my last chance. As it turned out, I began singing so much that, honestly, back in those days, it seemed to be a little bit more about students and looking and finding young potential talent for the Met, but also for their studio program. I felt like I was at a point in my career where it was important not to stop and think about the politics of the Metropolitan Opera auditions, and I was booked all the time by my late 20s, and that's the only two times I went.
Mm-hmm.
And it was funny because it wasn't long after that, and I want to say either Friederike von Stada or even Gail Robinson, before Gaylitha Nichols, were friends of mine, and I had sung with Flicka. I had not sung with Gail, but we had judged contests together. Mm-hmm. And I was producing more then. I had the Mississippi Opera. I had a program in Oklahoma. I had Mid-Michigan Opera Theater and Opera in the Ozarks there in Arkansas, which you're familiar with. So I think they thought, you know, it was nice to have someone that could actually cast people and relate to the students as a past singer or a current singer, because I was still singing a little bit, a singer who had experience on the other side of the audition table. So I have been judging the Met auditions, I want to say, for almost 30 years. It's been a very regular, enjoyable ride. I don't think I'm ready to quit. I mean, I hope not. I've been very fortunate to have picked a lot of winners over the years and heard some wonderful talent, and it's just always a joy for me to do it. People may not realize that we are all volunteers, and we receive no reimbursement, no compensation for our participation in the Metropolitan Opera National Council auditions. Our expenses are paid for on the most part, unless we just fail to get all the receipts in. That would be our fault. But other than that, we are volunteers.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that says something to our willingness and our enthusiasm for the process and our joy of encouraging young artists. And so for me, it's a real privilege not only to hear this extraordinary young talent, but to rub elbows with the extraordinary judges.
Mm-hmm.
Oh my gosh. I mean, I have been so spoiled working with judges it's marvelous. You know, it's just great.
How many of the judges that you've worked with have been singers that you've sung with?
Oh, dear. I couldn't even count, Anne. I don't even know. I would have to just guess. But, I mean, you know, sometimes all three of us have sung and worked together, sometimes two. I would say that on the most part, either the Metropolitan Opera National Council auditions office or even the local organizers do have a little bit of an idea about maybe what region you have represented more than others, you know, like if you're from the Southeast and you work there, live there, kind of grew up there, even though your career might have been worldwide, maybe you have more contacts in that region. So I think they seriously consider those things when they choose us. So in fact, they don't necessarily choose a lot of people from the same area.
Mm-hmm.
So sometimes it almost does end up being people that you haven't worked with. But even that's extraordinary because, you know, there's a lot of fantastic talent out there, even at the judge age. And some of these are really currently very viable entities in our industry. I mean, they're producers at major companies right now, or they're current singers. And those of us that are a little bit old school just kind of season the feast a little differently, but it's indeed a feast of talent on mm-hmm. both sides of the table. So I love it.
When we first came here, it was the first contact I'd ever had with people who worked with the MONC.
Auditions. I didn't realize that. Oh, how about?
And I was drawn into running it here.
Yeah.
For about 3 years, when the two local people who were doing it, one moved to Memphis and no longer had the time to do it. And Memphis had quite an input here at that point.
I remember.
Not the actual singers, but the people who were organizing it.
Exactly.
And the other was a very strong supporter of all things and loved the Met auditions.
Mm-hmm.
So I was kind of sucked into it. I was getting very active in promoting some of the arts here. And it was depressing because there were no people signing up to it. I think at one time we were lucky to get as many as 6 or 8 contestants. This was when it was very much more only in Arkansas. You know, you couldn't come in from nearby states or anything
right.
like that.
Well, and things have changed that way. I mean, having been with this program as long as I've been, I have seen it go through many, many different versions and variations on the theme. The deadline, I would say, or the cutoff age has changed several times, where it's maybe in the late 20s, even mid-20s for certain voice types, into the mid-30s sometimes for other voice types. It's been the same cutoff for everyone, and they've moved that up and down. They've been trying to find that kind of magic, you know, age that they will be able to draw the most talent and be fair. But I must say, the beauty of giving feedback afterwards is almost a result of the fact that they never get feedback.
Mm-hmm.
So that makes it, for me, even more special because they are just hungry. You know, they're hungry, and there's no time anywhere. Nobody takes the time, really. They even encourage us if, in fact, singers were not able to speak to us. And that does happen on Saturday evening usually, and kids will probably have a Sunday church job singing somewhere. And plus, many of them live, you know, great distances from where these auditions are held, and they may not want to wait into the late hours. Plus, they could have flights, for all we know, and they can't talk to us. Well, they do encourage us, or at least make it available to the singer that they can communicate with us by email.
Are you asked to go to more than one venue to come and do these each year?
We are. We are limited as to how often we can come, which is probably why it's been a while since I even came to Arkansas. This will be my third time. To Arkansas to judge, but oh my goodness, I mean, there may have been more than 5 years between them, mm-hmm. you know. I think the rule is 3 years.
The quality of the voices, the range of the voices is so remarkable in each category that they seem to come sometimes a little earlier than the voice has matured enough to be of real value in terms of the experience.
Oh, definitely.
And others whose voices, you know, as a judge, will change. The men's voices, the women's voices. Some women, I was thinking of a girl whose career seemed absolutely destined to flourish. And she sang, and she sang too much. And within 5 years, nobody was employing her.
Yes, that happens quite often, too.
But does it happen as much?
Well, not really. I mean, by and large, the person that goes to the top in this process is a pretty smart cookie and is well guided. And then, of course, once they make that, get that visibility at that level, they have lots of resources and lots of people advising them. I think it's still possible, and I do know that it's happened where people have gotten excited and, you know, producers have gotten excited about them and mm-hmm. just not been very discerning and just wanted them at all costs. And, you know, it's hard for a young artist to say no. And I think it's also hard for the Metropolitan, although they used to do this, to kind of function like an impresario where they say what their young singers can and cannot do. I've known a lot who have, you know, just gone straight to the top and stayed there, you know, from the auditions themselves, and then those who have just their star, even at the top, you know, when they won, just disappeared.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes I haven't really understood really why. I will say that one of the difficulties of being a judge is when you are in the process of judging and you do hear this variety of voices, you're judging them against each other. So sometimes you'll have a really extraordinary coloratura, and then you'll have a really extraordinary bass or whatever. And it's kind of like judging apples and oranges, and you're thinking, well, now, at this age, should this person be doing that? And so there's this funny kind of judgment going on, trying to compare these people. And also, you understand that so many are too young to really do some of the operatic repertoire that they offer.
Mm-hmm.
And, I mean, what are they going to offer? I mean, they can't offer, hymns from their hymnal at church. You know, they need to offer arias. And some of these young 20s, we even have teens. That's hard for them to find five pieces that are operatic that will show them mm-hmm. Within winning repertoire. In a sense there, we are judging potential.
Mm-hmm.
That's a tough one, too. That's tough. Of course, you've got the Roberta Peters and Gwen Jones and Ruth Welting and the people that were 16, 17, 18, 19 years old who won. And they are there. You know, they show up.
My guest is Carol Freeman, one of the three jurors coming to Little Rock for the Arkansas District Metropolitan Opera National Council auditions next weekend. He's sharing some of his experience and insights. Now, all your years at opera in the Ozarks, have you found or heard or had come to the particular area where you were one of the judges, singers that you had known earlier and have been fascinated by the way the voices have changed or matured?
Oh, yes. Well, I've had thousands of students, and I run into them almost every time I judge. I must say that is a challenge. I don't think it's so much a challenge for me in the way you might suspect. I'm tempted to be political and support that person and give them more attention and whatnot. The challenge is for me not to judge them based on what I know of them before and to observe it and keep tabs on it. Mm-hmm. So I'm sort of at this weird extremes where I function as a judge and then I have to function as a mentor because they are going to expect me to help them.
Mm-hmm.
And I have to do that at a different level because unfortunately, you know, honestly, I've had quite a few students recently who I cared for a great deal and I thought were quite talented and they didn't win. And, you know, it's kind of hard to explain that to them, that there may have been somebody else that was showing something that we thought was more important at the time and that they still did need to work on some things, although it was good. You know, so that's hard.
Now,
well, one of the things we clearly do, though, is most of us, and I think all of us really, is we recuse ourselves and we speak to the other judges and say, oh, by the way, I know this one.
Yeah.
And sometimes we will say how well we know that one.
Yeah.
And if it's like, you know, we've had them 4 years in school, maybe we won't be a part of the judging process. But if we had them one summer and we did one scene with them, we may not worry about it too much.
What about the repertoire? Who chooses it? And is it the same in every venue, or does it vary interestingly?
Well, it doesn't vary too much. It is my understanding, although I have not been a part of the national finals in New York, that there is a library at the Metropolitan Opera where the singers must draw from in order to select their repertoire, mainly because if, in fact, they do get to New York and get to the finals, the orchestra has to have the parts. They have to have the parts for that particular work.
Mm-hmm.
So you can't be too wild. You can't be too off, you know, off center, out of the standard repertoire. Although the Metropolitan has a very full library and also maybe even has a library of works that they don't perform regularly or don't perform at all. I mean, they may be in their library. I don't know. And there may even be a library of arias for this kind of event.
Mm-hmm.
But by and large, they tell them ahead of time and say, you know, these are the ones you should pick from.
Mm-hmm.
That is a huge list, though.
I bet.
I mean, you know,
no.
So it's not like you're going to hear six arias, you know,
no.
Over and over. We do. We do hear repeats, clearly.
And even the audience couldn't figure that one out.
Well, yeah. I mean, it was funny because in Lincoln, we had a girl, her second piece. The first piece, they can choose. It is whatever they want to. They have to come up with five pieces. And then when they first come out, they introduce themselves and they say, I would like to sing this number, you know. And so they pick their choice out of the five. And then we can do whatever we want to after that. Sometimes we pick a second one and hear the whole thing. Sometimes we just hear parts of a second. Sometimes I've even heard people ask for a little bit of a third or just the cadenza of something. I've even known a girl to win and go to the regionals only singing one. So they're pretty flexible there and let us make that decision. But that's usually what happens. But in Lincoln, we ask for an aria, for the second aria of a girl, and the next girl came out and sang that aria as her first choice. And oh, great.
Fascinating.
Two in a row. And I felt bad for the poor girl, you know, that came out and that was the one she had chosen and she was going to stick with it no matter what, you know.
Well, you mentioned earlier the changes you were noticing the quality of the singing and the choices.
Mm-hmm.
Have you found that the quality of the repertoire is changing, also reflecting the quality of voice that's available now?
Well, I think that's a great question. Honestly, there have always been someone out there that is able to sing all pieces, I believe. But the obviously, in the last 30 years, there have been a lot of new works that have been written and composed, and there's some sensational repertoire in those last three decades that have become a part of the Metropolitan Opera repertoire. And they've also become a part of the standard audition repertoire that singers like to sing. So that certainly enhanced that. I will say, though, that you know, the big guns, the things that people, the arias that people do that win, that hasn't changed a lot. What has happened is that just as we have track and someone finally broke the four-minute mile, every time they run, someone is trying to break that record. And so, you know, every singer that gets up is trying to do it just one bit better than the last one. And I must say that the quality of the singing has improved as the demands of the music require.
Mm-hmm.
I you know, perhaps we are more concerned about that stylistically than we used to, because our own industry and our own life as musicians has gone through cycles where, you know, maybe we are more interested in just the sound, and we will forgive some off notes, or we will forgive some missing notes in cadenzas, or a crack here or there, or someone who can't stand and sing and look like anything. But honestly, I believe that, and probably because of the way opera has changed and become more visual with videos, DVDs, the HD broadcasts from the Met, they're more visual. We not that we favor them, but we are definitely looking for the whole package.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And so I believe that has changed, and I believe that in some regards that's improved at least the presentation and the performance itself. I am a firm believer that a moving, sincere, authentic performance as an artist and as a character will also affect the color of the voice.
Mm-hmm.
And the energy in the voice, and so that can only enhance the image. And yet you have, examples of what we would consider somewhat lethargic divas who are quite overweight, who just stand there and sing, and you just fall over, you know, from the beauty of it. So we're still looking for that voice. We're
mm-hmm.
still looking for that voice, but I must say, on the average, we are not accepting that alone, especially from a voice that is not in that top percentile. Does that make sense?
Yes, and you've got a lot on your plate when you're looking at all these things together, but it is something that I feel, just by listening to some of the years gone by, that there is a definite shift trying to get away from the olden goldies into
mm-hmm.
a repertoire
mm-hmm.
that is more likely to be what they would meet if they go into the profession seriously.
Right.
And
right.
so, yes, opera in the Ozarks offers all the traditional, which is what attracts so many, because
yeah.
it makes a difference if they've had a full performance where they've sung a role right the way through in
right.
more than one opera when they're asked to do an audition. Have you done this role? Do you do this role? Are you interested
right.
in that role? It's all part of the package. You can't come and just know a lot of arias and look beautiful and wear a pretty dress
right.
the way it still happens.
Well, that's a very, very good point, because I do feel like that people are much more in tune with the demands and the extremes of every work, so that they will literally, almost scientifically, be able to maneuver everything at the fullest peak of their power, and that particular work, even if it's something like Stravinsky's, Anne's aria from The Rake's Progress, And it's something that's absolutely going to show every brilliant facet of that diamond. And so that is a little bit more particular maybe than what I remember as a kid, where it was like, oh, I just want to sing that beautiful aria. And, you know, I think most judges are firm believers in picking arias that are not only winning arias, but are absolutely ideal for you. One of the biggest criticisms I hear is they have no business singing that aria right
mm-hmm.
now.
Mm-hmm.
And one thing we encourage, and I encourage my own students, I say, please look at the entire role. Don't assume that one lovely little ditty is all this particular character sings, and that little harp solo that's accompanying you is all that's playing in the orchestra when you sing, because there's going to be a time in the third act when there's six trombones playing while you sing, and you aren't going to be heard. So, I think the judges are a little bit more discerning about that now. We at least all talk about it.
But we could go on all day talking about all the ins and outs and things that you've done over the years. And I just can't wait for you to come and to be here. Who are your other judges?
Well, let me think now if I can remember. Doggone it. Donna D. Vaughn. She is a director at the Manhattan School of Music and has been a part of the Lindemann Met program, obviously at the Metropolitan in New York City. And who is the third judge? I know I knew this. I think it's Melissa Wagner, who is Galitha's assistant in the Metropolitan Opera National Council offices. I could be wrong about that. I just don't have it in front of my face, and I do so many. I've got a lot of different faces in my mind about who's been judging with me.
Mm-hmm.
I will say that while we've been speaking, I've been looking through several of my Met programs.
Mm-hmm.
Now, these have been district and regional programs, and they haven't gone into the great history of it. But, I mean, here's the purpose of the National Council Auditions Program is, and it just lists the mission and all that stuff, but it doesn't have dates. So I apologize for not knowing exactly when it started, but certainly way before I was born. And if you consider that before Flicka and Gail Robinson were heads of the Metropolitan Opera National Council, Risa Stevens was.
Mm-hmm.
And so that goes back, obviously she wasn't in the fullest part of her career when she was doing that. It was more of a service later in her career. But still, that was in the 40s. So it's been going on a while.
Yep.
So it's a very exciting legacy to be a part of. And one of the joys I get is working with singers. What can I do? I can't be clairvoyant and all, but at least I can help them considering my experience, and they'll have coachings and just say, well, if you were the judge, what would you pick? And, of course, I'm not going to be their judge, but that is just a handy exercise.
Yeah.
And I would encourage all of your contestants, I don't know how many will hear our broadcast before they compete, but I would encourage them to sing for someone, to get up and just try it,
Yeah.
And also to be on the other side of the table and let them sing for them.
And if it can be recorded and then played back to them, that in itself would be a learning experience for most of them.
Oh, fantastic. Fantastic learning experience. Just wonderful.
That was Carol Freeman, one of the three jurors who will be in Little Rock next Saturday, January the 16th, for the Metropolitan Opera National Council Auditions, Arkansas District. Carol is Valerie Adams Distinguished Professor of Opera Studies, Georgia State University School of Music. The Arkansas District MONC auditions are set for 1 p.m. Saturday, January the 16th, in the Stella Ball-Smith Concert Hall, Fine Arts Center on the UALR campus. It is free and open to the public, so come and make an audience for these young singers.
And that concludes this week's program. Please join us next weekend at the same time. I'm Ann Nicholson. Thank you for listening.
The Art Scene is a presentation of UALR Public Radio.